Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading this morning, text 18 from Canto 4, chapter 16.
Dehinam atmavat preshtaha suradam nandivardhanaha muktasanga prasangoyam dandapanir asadushuhu dehinam atmavat preshtaha suradam nandivardhanaha Mukta Sangha Prasangoyam Dandapanir Asadushu Dehinam.
To all living entities having a body,
Atmavat
as himself,
Prishtaha
considering dear,
Suridham
of his friends,
Nandivardhanaha
increasing pleasures,
Muktasanga
with persons devoid of material contamination,
Prasangaha
intimately associated,
Ayam,
this king,
Dandapanihi,
a chastising hand,
Asadushu,
to the criminals. Translation: the king will consider all embodied living entities as dear as his own self, and he will always be increasing the pleasure of his friends. He will intimately associate with liberated persons, and he will be a chastising hand to all impious persons. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Dehinam refers to those who are embodied. The living entities are embodied in different forms, with number 8,400,000 species. All of these were treated by the king in the same way he would treat himself. In this age, however, so-called kings and presidents do not treat all other living entities as their own self. Most of them are meat eaters. And even though they may not be meat eaters, they may pose themselves to be very religious and pious and still allow cow slaughter within their state. Such sinful heads of state cannot actually be popular at any time. Another significant word in this verse is muktasanga prasangaha, which indicates that the king was always associating with liberated persons. So the verse again, Dehinam Atmavat Preshtaha Suradham Nandivardhanaha Muktasanga Pasangoyam Dandapanir Asadushu. The king will consider all embodied living entities as dear as his own self, and he will always be increasing the pleasure of his friends. He will intimately associate with liberated persons, and he will be a chastising hand to all impious persons. So for those of you who are not local, you're from some here for this morning, just a little bit about this section. There are persons who are part of the royal assembly, a brahminical function on behalf of the royal order? Is there persons who are knowledgeable in different specific areas? We discussed this, recall very clearly last time I was here. There are different names for different persons who are doing these rabbinical functions. You know, those that are, that they're knowledgeable in the history, and they, from time to time, recite the history of the glorious ancestry of the kings. Some are bards that, on special occasions, they speak the glories of their, the illustrious king, the present one. Some are just for the king's pleasure. To wake him up in the morning instead of having an alarm clock, they come and sing his glories, and he wakes up thinking, yes, I'm very glorious. Like that. There's different persons who are maintained by the royal family who have different functions like that. That they're brahminical ordered persons, so they're knowledgeable and sense controlled, at least in principle, in theory. And they have a function for the well-being of the state, because the king is to be honored, but the king is also to be worthy of honor. And this is a public function where these individuals, the English word that's being used in different places is bards. I guess that's a British term. Where they're speaking to the public about the king. And in different ways, that the character of Prithu Maharaj is being described. And step back and abstract from the narrative, it's giving us information. What are the qualities of a king? Because Prithu Maharaj is a Shaktivesh avatar, meaning he's an empowered living entity representing an aspect of the absolute personality of Godhead in full. So he's exhibiting the ruling potency or palana shakti of the personality of Godhead. So these are features of an ideal ruler. And anyone that's going to take a position of ruling should emulate, not ruling, but leading, you can say. And in a very broad sense, Vaishnavas are meant to lead society, not necessarily in a role of a government officer, but in the role of an example-setting person. Yad-yad acharati shrestas tat-tat eve tororjana. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever the shrestha, whatever the elevated person in society does, tat-tat eve tororjana, the people in general follow that. So as Vaishnavas, one may be a housewife, one may be an office worker, one may be a brahmachari, one may be a student, one may be whatever one may be, a worker, whatever one may be. A Vaishnava within society is meant to show by example. That's a kind of leading. The term in Sanskrit is acharya, one who teaches by example. Of course, we have our founder Acharya, and he taught us by his example so many things. But each of us within society are to be examples. So these apply to us. What to speak of, there are always some relationships where we're directly, besides kind of broadly and universally, where they're directly taking some responsibility for others. Let's say especially within ISKCON, the Hare Krishna movement, we're reaching out to others. Just like last night, there were, I was told, and it sure looked like it to me, there are a lot of new people. And so the new people are looking to, what's the model? What's the devotee of Krishna model? And how we conduct ourselves is teaching. And then some of those persons met, devotees, I'm sure, and then some relationships will form. And then we're extending ourselves to those individuals. Or so many examples. We have programs, public programs, small programs, large programs. We reach out to people and some relationships are formed. And then we help those people make another step toward Krishna. So that's an important, responsible role. So these principles apply. Within the family, there's some responsibility to family members. And these principles apply. So whatever the circle, big, small, medium, these principles apply, is my message. It's about a king, but it's about us. And this particular verse is describing four different kinds of relationships in the four different lines of the verse. One is people in general, another is those who are friends, another is those who are very elevated, and then those who are asadhu or duskriti or, you know, troublemakers. So there's different behaviors of a king or one who's extending association to others. And we have different relationships. And this is instructing us how we should conduct those different relationships. And when I read the verse this morning, I thought, well, I'm really happy with what the first line is saying, because it's a universal teaching within all religions of the world. I mean, besides ethics, it's theistic in the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, and because I've been studying this, the teachings of Sri Brahma Samhita. We're to cultivate bhakti in the framework or in the atmosphere of theistic conduct. The simple language of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. So it's conducive to always thinking of Krishna if we frame our life in, you can say, the mode of goodness or theistic conduct. So part of theistic conduct is how we interact with others. And how should we interact with others? Just in a broad sense, it can apply certainly to those who we're very close with, or those, you know, the circle, the concentric circles can go out. People in general, those who are immediate family members, those who we associate with as a community, and just, you know, those who we're meeting and keep going out. But the principle is the same. From my upbringing, I know it as the golden rule. Chakri, what's the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Say it again. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I invite you, Google it. See what you come up with. And there are pages, I have it in my computer stored, that it's from different traditions, not just like the mainstream religions, but this one and that one, and, you know, all over the world, you know, Siberia and American Indian tribes and, you know, Scandinavia. It's worldwide. It's a principle. In different languages, in their native language and way of saying things, how should you treat other people? Treat other people as if it's you, as you would want others to treat you. Treat other people that way. Or you can say it in same thing in another way. you'd like to see the world be a certain way, treat other people the way you would like to see the world. You can help create the world. You know, you're just one person. You can't create a world, but you're a part of the world, and you wish to see the quality or character of the world be better. So do that. That's like, you know, creating by your own little individual effort a value or ethic or a code of conduct. But then how do you determine what that should be? One of the principles is, like, very, very humanistic or sensitive or empathetic, is as you would want others to treat you, you treat them. So let's, you know, for example, how do we apply this principle? Imagine that you have some shortcoming. Just imagine it. There aren't any, but just imagine you have a shortcoming. Just imagine it. And there's somebody who you have a relationship with, and your shortcoming rubs them the wrong way. You know you have a shortcoming, and it rubs them the wrong way. What would you want that person to do in relation to yourself? Whatever that is, turn it around. And you're interacting with someone that has a shortcoming. How should you interact with that person, specific to their shortcoming? Whatever it is that you would want others to do towards you, you do that towards them. Very simple principle. Take it out of the shortcoming context and say, imagine that you're human like everybody else's, instead of a transcendentalist that's beyond the modes of nature and beyond karma and fully realized soul. Imagine that you're not that, you're like everybody else. And you wish that people would encourage you, because you're trying and, you know, encouragement is nice. It helps you keep going. So now take that dimension and turn it around, and there's people around you. And consider, they're trying, and I'd like to encourage them for the effort of their trying. So do that, because that's how you would want others to treat you. And you can keep going with that model, and it's universal. It helps enormously to serve as an antidote for the tendency of the age of Kali to just fault find and make quarrel with your neighbor or your family member or yourself. Like, beat yourself up because, you know, because of something. And that's not a good way to treat yourself or to treat your family members or to treat others. And I'll come back to this one because it's so important, but we'll move a little bit on to the next one. Then there's friends. And sometimes in the Hare Krishna movement, this is a little social commentary here, but sometimes we're kinder to new people than we are to committed people. You know what I mean? Like, we can extend ourselves unlimitedly to new people. We just don't have expectations. They can do silly things and foolish things and talk things, and we're okay because they're new people. But then somebody stops being a new person and they're now closer and then we're less tolerant and have more issues with them, more friction, and have like bad feelings towards them and all those kind of things. Don't talk to them, just ignore them, move on, you know, just deal with the new people. And then, so that's friends, now you know, get a little closer, and then family members. Whoa, that gets, because it's more proximate. And we know what Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam about conflicts within the family. He writes, it's likened to bamboo. We were discussing this the other day. I didn't understand the metaphor until one day we were in Mayapur doing the Mayapur Parikrama. This is with like, you know, the 1,000 people and going. So there's a particular place near Vidyanagara, and they had us spend the night at a school. So the school offered our facility, so it was just classrooms. So we had to, like, you know, bathing and other bodily functions were done in the classrooms. They were done, they had some outdoor facility like that. But then I was going for a morning walk, and I heard in the distance this, you know, loud noise. It sounded almost like gunfire. Oh, wow. But I bravely kept walking, and it was just a bamboo patch, and the wind was blowing, and because they're close to each other, the bang! Loud. And then, so I understood it was just bamboo. Although it sounded like something more dangerous. Like that, when family members come together, because of they're very close to one another, and sometimes the wind blows, sometimes there's a bang. And it's best if it's not like that. You know, you can just, okay, little bamboo over here and a little bamboo over here, a little nut, you know. And that way of making a distance between this bamboo and that bamboo, in social dynamic, it's how do you do it? Because you're close. It's an important question I'm asking, so please consider the question. When you're close, how do you maintain, you know, the minimizing the banging? And the answer is respect. That's how you do it. Respect. Because respect, then there's a little distance. I'll just share this. In terms of Srila Prabhupada, we, at a distance, regard Srila Prabhupada as a Uttama Bhagavat personality. And he was. And he is. However, there was a phenomenon that happened again and again. There were exceptions, but it happened again and again. The persons that served Srila Prabhupada as his servant, because of that proximity, it became then familiarity. And with that familiarity, they began not seeing him as he is, not seeing him with respect, but seeing him as an ordinary person and criticizing based upon their own contaminations. And they fell down. Again and again it happened. Like a little further anecdotal thing. There was a situation in our previous Brooklyn Temple, Henry Street Temple, 1971, something like that. Remember having a conversation with a god brother. I'll leave his name out because it's not important. And he was sharing with me that he was approached to replace the person who had just fallen down? And would he be willing to be Prabhupada's secretary or servant? And his reply was, no way. And I said, why? Because, you know, Prabhupada's servant, you have so much association. No way. Because I see what happens. Proximity, familiarity, contempt, fall down. And I know my nature. I'm a little, you know, passionate, a little pushy, and I don't want to go through that sequence. He was like, I could tell from the conversation, he was of two minds. It was a little, like, difficult for him to say no, but it was wise of him to say no. Because. So now that's an example with our founder, Acharya. And then, you know, then we'll come back to where we are. And then we have close association. I'll just share another consideration, another application of this principle. The Houston Temple. You've been to the Houston Temple? No? Anyone here been to the Houston Temple? So you know. The Houston Temple, once upon a time, was a little church. I mean, a real little church. And it's in kind of like a kind of an industrial, quasi-industrial, very, very simple residential place. It's the kind of residential place where there were several properties where the people just had, what do you, like, not cabins, but trailers, like a trailer park kind of place. You know, six or seven or eight of them. And then another one, six or seven. Just like really simple dwellings. No lawn, just like a little place to live for their family. And that's the kind of neighborhood, like real simple. Over a period of time, quietly, the temple president bought up some of those properties. Because he didn't want to, you know, he didn't do anything. He just bought the property. You know, it's because the prices would go up. So he bought the properties. And now they're in the process of selling plots to people to build homes near the temple. It's like a little neighborhood where you can just walk to the temple. It's like a village. And then now across the street, big place. It used to be a something or other metal manufacturer or something or other big warehouse. It's down, it's level. And they're going to put up apartments. People who don't have money to buy a house, they can rent an apartment, and they'll have like lots of people near the temple. Nice. I advise the temple president, be prepared for the bamboo phenomena. I suggest that you do like three or four things, like get a dispute mediation program set up, you know, ADR. Alternative, just rather than people like, you know, going to court with each other, shooting each other, you know, yelling at each other, having something that's more peaceful. And some village elders, you know, the modern term is ombuds. Those of you that are in corporate world, you know ombuds. Does your university have an ombuds? No? An ombuds is like, they don't have anything to do administration-wise or teaching-wise or any-wise. They just like, they're neutral. They're not attached to anything. And people can go to them privately and say, there's a problem over here, but I can't say it because if I do, the politics are so bad. MIT has one. The politics are really heavy at big universities like that. Mary Rowe, she's helped train Braja Bihari, because you know Braja Bihari, he's an ombuds for the world. He's an ombudsman, and he gives seminars to the National Convention of Ombuds people. He's a spokesperson. He's really a gifted person. He's quiet. He's really gifted. And so have somebody that can, you know, you can resolve the thing before it becomes a fire. It's much easier to take care of a spark than it is a fire. Those are application points. When we are close together, so as our temple community grows, we get closer to one another. We do things like what happened yesterday. And there's always, quietly, there's stuff. Like somebody didn't show up, or somebody was supposed to do this and they didn't do this. Somebody messed up. And then, because we're doing things together, it's an opportunity to grow together. It's also an opportunity to have more bamboo programs. So the first principle applies, treating others as we would want others to treat us. Then there's a few that do all the work, and there's a lot of people that don't do work. That's another one that happens, goes around. But there's different people in different positions with different considerations and different trajectories and their spiritual advancement and different needs, and who knows what's going on and with their lives. So rather than find issues with people now that we become close, the essential principle is respect. Here's a person that wants to go to Krishna. They're a spirit soul, first of all, part of Krishna. So they're to be respected. And myself, I have shortcomings and defects and all kinds of stuff. But there is this reality that's me, that's a spirit soul, part of the Supreme Spirit Soul. So there's intrinsic worth within myself and within others, and I value that, and I respect that. Now, we're in it together, we're trying to go to Krishna. So how can I help this other person go to Krishna? How can I live my life in such a way and interact with them in such a way I can remind them of Krishna? That's what a friend is. In the transcendental sense, that's what a friend is. That's what friends do. That's what friendship in Krishna consciousness is. We speak or act or we exist in such a way it reminds others, especially those close to us, of Krishna. And this way, nandi vardanaha, we're increasing the pleasure of suhridam, the second life. Rather than, the clash program, we're interacting with them with respect and trying to, in a way that's suitable for my nature and what, the relationship I have with this person, to remind them of Krishna. And live by that principle, and it's a principle of happiness. It's an antidote for Kali Yuga. Great principle. To whatever extent one can do that, it's a great principle. And then Prabhupada highlights this third one in his purport, and that is mukta sangha prasangataha. So sangha, I'll share this with you. Sangha, commonly we translate it as association. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his writings in Bhaktiloka, when describing janasangaschalolyam cha shadvir bhaktir vinashati, that verse from Nectar of Instruction, he takes this word sangha and breaks it down into two. One, he says, is association. That's one meaning. Another is attachment, because we can associate through attachment. Like you develop an attachment for something, money. Although you may not have it, if there's an attachment, then where is your mind? It's on the thing that you have an attachment for. Or boy-girl stuff. Contemplate, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment for them. Common is boy-girl stuff, contemplating the objects of the senses, but it can be, you know, big boys and big girls, and, you know, or anything, contemplating something. You develop an attachment for that something. So he then takes those two, the unwholesome kind of association, jana sangha, and says there's two kinds of unwholesome association and two kinds of unwholesome attachment. This is a little nectar of instruction lesson in the middle of our Bhagavatam class. Unwholesome association is association with non-devotees, or those opposed to Krishna. And another is association with the opposite sex. Intimate association with the opposite sex is unwholesome association, if for one who wants to be, to spiritually progress. And then there's, you know, there's standards to be observed in that whole matter, and not observing them, shadvir bhaktir vinashati, it destroys bhakti. Observing them, it elevates bhakti. So then, attachments are of two kinds, he says. So this is still sangha. Two kinds. One is objects, and the other is prejudices. Prejudices. Like, you know, a contemporary application of prejudice is racial prejudice. Somebody's skin color is different than mine, so I have racial prejudice. Or someone's religion is different than mine, so I have religious prejudice. Or someone's economic, socioeconomic situation is different than mine, so I have a, you know, that kind of a prejudice. You know, an affinity, groupism. I have an affinity with this material category, this upadhi, and therefore an aversion to the other kind. That's what a prejudice is. It's not on the spiritual platform, it's on the material platform. And I like and I don't like. That's a kind of sangha. Even I may not have direct contact with that other socioeconomic group or the other racial group or the other religious group, but I have a prejudice and an attachment to that prejudice for and against. And then the other is objects, attachment for objects. And you can do it the flip side, an aversion from other objects. So there's so many verses in Bhagavad Gita speaking about the position of a transcendentalist is they're equally disposed. Samoham sarvabhuteshu, from Krishna's position, name dvesho sti na priha, or the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita describing the yogi, they see with equal vision. Pandita samadarshana, see with equal vision. They see the pebble, stone, and gold the same. Or, you know, in a very advanced position, King Shachaketu. Svarga, heaven. Apavarga, liberation. Narakeshu, hell. Apitu yarta darshanam. You see them, he sees such a person as King Shachaketu sees them equally. How? Narayana paraksarge nakutashchana bibhyati. Because of their Narayana parayana position. That's how we get to transcend. It's not just by putting a vice grip on your mind and holding it there, because it's too elusive. It goes away. The determination goes away and the mind goes away. The mind wins. So that position can be reached by Narayana Parayana or Vasudeva Parayana or Krishna consciousness, essentially, by becoming. So this is the qualification of Prithu. This is the qualification that's being recommended for us. To associate with mukta personalities, mukta sangha, is the phrase. Mukta Sangha Prasangataha. Mukta Sangha Prasangataha. Prasangataha. It just adds the prefix pra, and Prabhupada has translated that as intimately associate with. So we should seek out, we should cultivate a life in which we intimately associate with persons who are beyond material influence. Make friends, you know, this is the Madhyama Adhikari position. Make friends with those who are peers, and the friendship is remind them of Krishna, and that brings happiness to them. The people in general, treat them as you would want yourself to be treated. Associate intimately with liberated souls. Now here's the king. So we're not kings, so it's not our charge to do this. But he's got a dandapani. He's got a stick in his hand. We're not Kshatriyas, so I'll just repeat it. It's not like, you know, our job is to go around and with a stick in our hand and letting people have it that are not holy. And take our philosophy and hit them with our philosophy and say, you know, thanks. That's not what, sometimes that happens in the name of preaching, and it's not what our teachings tell us. Sometimes people do it anyways. So that I'm emphasizing this. Please don't do that. It's not very attractive. It's not going to win the hearts of thoughtful people. If we go around with the stick of our teachings in our hand and bashing people, not the way to do it. But for a king, literally or figuratively, with a stick in their hand, that is, you know, danda, that the purpose of the stick is to admonish. I'll just end with this. Specific to discipline, one of the instructions that Prabhupada gave about children and education of children, specific to the Gurukul system. There's a very nice dialogue. It was transcribed, where Prabhupada was visiting in Dallas, and he was meeting with the teachers in Dallas, and the teachers were asking Prabhupada's question about discipline. Prabhupada, some of the children, they're totally disruptive. What should we do? Can we discipline them? Prabhupada, treat them with love. Devotee, teachers. But Prabhupada, we can't teach at all because they're just so unruly. We feel we have to do something. What is the measure of discipline that we can apply? Prabhupada, treat them with love. They went like, you know, five times back and forth like that. So they basically said, okay, we'll treat them with love. And once they came to that position, only then did Prabhupada say how they could discipline. Because the first rule of discipline is the person who you are disciplining must understand the place that you're coming from is a place of love. And if they don't feel that, discipline is going to be very ineffective. It's going to produce the opposite. It's going to produce more rebellion. And as it's true with children, it's true with people. The first principle is a principle of love. Exactly what Prabhupada did with all of us. He didn't start with rules. He didn't start with a stick in his hand. You people are so degraded. Clean yourselves up and behave like this and this and this. He didn't do that. His first principle was just as he was instructing the teachers with children. So it's beyond just children. It's relationships. Even when there's something that needs discipline, that's in our relationships. We're not Kshatriyas, this is relationships. Then, so they, okay, we'll treat them with love. Then Prabhupada said, what you can do is you can hold the stick in your hand and shake the stick, but never use it. But even shaking the stick, like we use our finger like a stick, like that. I've seen some people that's like, that's all they do is they speak like that. And they're taking a commanding position. And it doesn't invite obedience. It invites something else, like, you know, either fear or what's wrong with this person, or, you know, there's no love in the medium of the exchange. It's just a stick. That's not conducive to, it's not what a leader does. Now, one last thing. We have a temple. And sometimes, so there has to be a person who takes the administrative role. Just taking our model in our, say, in our community. And it's not everyone's position to be with a stick in their hand or the ruler that like chastises people that step out of line. But somebody must be in a position to do that. And when somebody does that, assuming the place that they're coming from is a place of love, following that rule that Prabhupada gave, they've tried in a number of ways, in case it's like, you know, just a minor situation, or in the case if it's a major situation, they have to take some action. Have to take some action. Can't. That kind of protection is a duty of a king or a president or the formal head of a community. When the situation is just like, as Prabhupada has translated, criminal-like, must be dealt with. It's not always that it has to be dealt with like, you know, smashing the person, but it must be dealt with in a firm way, proportionate to or commensurate to the situation and the risk that others are subjected to. Okay, so there's our morning class. See if there's any discussion or questions. Yes?
Maharaj, I'm just requesting for some light on this thing.
Okay.
Relationship with friends. There's two parties, and they both understand that they are both working on their issues.
They're both what? Working on their issues?
Yeah.
Okay.
But on one situation, they actually have very passionate, sensitive issues. Both are touching each other, sensitive issue. So some conflict come. And they both understand that it will happen because they are working on that and we discuss that. But still, I find that there's some eyes and there's some hesitation within that relationship, even though both parties understand that.
Well, so you want to know what to do in that dynamic. There's a menu, and select one. One that seems most, not just one that feels most comfortable, because maybe I need to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. Do what's most appropriate. That's ideal. One, just exchange that kind of understanding that you just expressed. I understand, you understand, we're both working on things. And I respect that, and I know that you respect that I'm working on things. Still, I just want to share this. There's some sense of discomfort, perhaps from both of us. Not that necessarily it has to get like, let's work it out, but there's some sense of discomfort besides the respect element. That's one option. Open some dialogue on that. Another option. Respect from a distance. Just time and Krishna, because Krishna's time, may intervene and heal the whole thing. Just like, it'll just, like a cloud in the sky, it'll just disappear. That's another option. I learned that one from Bhujan Prabhu. In some cases, it's best not to, you know, it's Krishna and Krishna's relationship with the parties involved. And let the relationship with Krishna restore, let Krishna do what Krishna does better than we're trying to do what Krishna does. Sometimes that's a good solution, a good conclusion to reach. Then another is the village elder model. Somebody who knows both parties, and that neutral person who is wise and, you know, not partial to this one or that one. They're just very, very balanced and mature. Here's a situation. What do you think? Is there something that I should be doing, or something that you think maybe you're intervening on, you know, and just like getting that cloud removed? What do you think? With complete, the essential is with complete confidentiality. It's like just complete confidentiality between you and the ombudsperson or the village elder person. That's another option. And best to pick somebody that you know is trusted by the other person. I mean, it's just you, but like maybe supposing you're speaking to another person who's in the midst of that, that's an option that you can give them. Another is prayer. Prayer is powerful. My dear Lord Krishna, you're all powerful and all knowing. You're all merciful. And, you know, and then the rest. Here's a fifth one. Try to improve the quality of your chanting with the wish that if Krishna, I'm not sure what to do. From within, please inspire me what to do. You know, because not any one of these four options seems exactly right, so I'll be patient and look for your inspiration. Here's the sixth one. Ask your husband. What do you think? You know me very well. What should be done? That's like, you know, if someone very dear to you and understands you well and is your well-wisher and isn't going to, you know, control or push or coerce or something, just like that. So there's six choices. And it's not like we have to hurry up and do one of those six. It's just, you know, it's liberating to know that you have choices. It's not just like I'm stuck in the situation that I'm uncomfortable with. I have free will and I have some options, and Krishna's kind, he's given some resources. Sucha?
I was in this same chapter, like 416th Psalm.
What?
416th Psalm sloka. Previous verses.
416:7.
Psalm.
17 or 7?
Seven. So in that it says like, King Pridhu, like, gives, forgives and forgives the impious people who are poor, don't follow the rules and regulations.
Transgressors.
Causeless mercy, he would forgive. But here it says, he would chastise.
Well, it depends on the nature, doesn't it? Supposing somebody took grain on Ekadasi, and supposing somebody murdered somebody. You can forgive a transgression and address a murderer. Oh, it's okay. Just don't do it again, okay? So some things require firm discipline, some things are just milder.
So how does he would bring the child, or he would punish them, showing that he does not love, or disqualified, nice character? How does he do that?
Are you asking what are the yardsticks? What measures does he apply to make this one or that one tolerate and just forgive or take action? Well, to that I say a little common sense helps. Like, you know, or to commensurate to something that's very serious. So now where's the line between what's, you know, to be tolerated? That's the, what you're asking. What's to be tolerated? Where's action to be taken? It's a little bit like her question, not the same as her question, but you know, that's actually another option. Number seven is, well, it's kind of like in time Krishna will do what Krishna's going to do and Krishna will take it away. Let's see if Krishna takes it away. So depending, commensurate to the seriousness or the gravity. So rather than like, here's the line, and don't cross the line. It's not exactly like that. It's a little common sense. And inspiration from Krishna kind of thing. And it also depends upon one's spiritual strength. One's own spiritual strength. What we tolerate and what we, you know, this, now this is in the position of a leader, it's not us, we're not a king. Some things are just not acceptable. And they must be addressed. I'll get a little specific just because it's an ISKCON issue. In North America, we have two policies for our North American leadership group, executive committee and other persons, and it's been confirmed now by presidents. We have a child abuse policy and a pastoral abuse policy. Person, as in the secular world, if a priest, it's called the power position, if a teacher with a student or someone that gives counseling, you know, psychological counseling or career counseling or a medical doctor and their patient, if they have some sexual dealing with those persons, it's not just, you know, two consenting adults. There's law in America today that says that person can lose their license or be sued for violation of the person who's seeing them in a high position, as a power position. So in religious activity, similarly, it doesn't have to be the president. It can be the pujari or the person who gives the class, and then outside of the class, and there's some relationship, you know, some friendship, and then the friendship turns into some sexual thing. It's called pastoral abuse. So we don't call it that. We call it something else because we don't let lawsuits, because we're not. But we have a policy. If something like that happens, there's the line. And we have a procedure for seeing, you know, is there prima facie, is there a smoking gun before we launch anything? But it's so, then we have a procedure that we follow. Because that's, you know, that's like really firm. And that's in America. And then, you know, the child, we have, all temples are supposed to have a child protection team. And our members of our temple should know, if you see something say something. You know that one. And who do you say it to? You say it to the child protection team. And if it comes to the president, he takes it to the child protection team so he can remain neutral. And they're empowered to, you know, is there a smoking gun? Is there enough in this report to say it's worth an investigation? And then they have a procedure. And they don't mess around. They go and make a police report. Let the police investigate who fired the gun. You know, who did what? We go to so it's a policy. It's like, there's the line. Protection of children and protection of women within a policy. Formal policy. So there's some lines within our ISKCON society. You know, we're not equipped to conduct an investigation and make, you know, we can have an in-house ecclesiastic thing that says this person cannot hold the position within ISKCON, leadership position. They can come. In some cases we say they can't come for protection of the children. We're not saying they're guilty of a crime. We're saying, because we're in America, there's all these, like, people bring lawsuits for you know, whatever they want to. So we have to be careful. But protection of women, protection of children has formal policy. Now, in India, you know, they're not in the same wavelength as America, although it's getting like that because, you know, the abuse of women in India is out of control, and similarly abuse of children. So it's getting there. So there's a cultural, whatever it is, difference, but at least in America we have this. And that's an administrative, you know, from the governance division of ISKCON, this is a policy, and our temple presidents are informed of it. You may not be aware of it, maybe you are aware of it, but we have a North American Child Protection Office director, and she's in touch with our temple presidents wanting to know, who are your Sunday school teachers? And you're supposed to do an evaluation of your Sunday school teachers. And who's your child protection team? Do they have the policy? Are they acquainted with the policy? So she's calling our presidents and, you know, making sure we're enforcing our policy for the protection of children. Not because we're after somebody or we're mean or something. We want to protect our children. So there's some areas that are like, there's no question about it. No gray area. And then there's some others that are, there's some discretion involved. And that takes some common sense. Some cases leniency, some cases, you know, discipline. We want to encourage. We also want to protect. Okay. Yes.
Regards to fault finding.
Fault finding.
And if we are in association of someone who's not exactly a devotee, or they may be a little Krishna conscious, but suppose somebody senior at work, and I've heard that when you are in association with someone who's constantly fault finding and some other people, then you should try to avoid them or just leave the place. But what to do in situations where you cannot do that? That's not an option. So how to protect ourselves, like our consciousness.
I would want to, I don't think it's appropriate to ask the next question. Maybe privately we can have a discussion about, I would need to hear some of the particulars. And I don't think it's suitable for a public forum. But depending upon the particulars, what your options might be. you know, one of them could be, you know, by verbal communication, let them know either softer or more firmly, Prabhuji, I'm a very neophyte devotee, and I don't have the qualification to hear these things and still remain, you know, properly situated in Krishna consciousness. So kindly share these with somebody that's more advanced than me. Like, I know you have some concern about things. Another is, you know, softer. But, you know, a little harder. Here's a line. I'm not prepared to cross the line. And if you continue, I have no choice. I mean, I'm going to walk. So you communicate that. But you say you can't because, and I'd like to know why you can't. You can walk. And say, I'm not going to be subjected to this. Then another option is, you know, somebody who is the village elder. You go to the village elder and say, help. And I'm not in a position to advise, instruct, or give our teachings to a person who is doing this for whatever the reasons. And, but for their well-being and for my protection, what would you recommend? Is there some way that without, you know, without implicating me into the whole thing, do you think something can be done? That's another. Then another is a friend of theirs who may understand and may be able to help influence their friend. Depends. Those are some options. Anything else? Yes.
I have heard some morning walk conversations.
Could you say it again?
I have heard some morning walk conversations of Srila Prabhupada.
Okay.
And in that, I was kind of surprised that many times he would tell devotees to preach in ways that he used to preach, like a little aggressive and, you know.
Sometimes he did, and sometimes he went the other direction. Without knowing the person and the context, it's hard to say how to take that. That's the risk of conversations.
What I'm trying to understand is, like, in certain situations, you would tell devotees to talk boldly, like in a bold way, and it kind of, I was wondering if he set up some standard for devotees who preach in this style. Like, is there, because a lot of people and get, you know,
carried away.
Yeah.
I can say something about it. I'm glad. I already did, but I can say something more about it. But I don't want to go through it one more time, so I'm not going to go revisit the question again. Just address your question. While in a broad sense, Prabhupada wanted us to not succumb to the blind faith in atheism or blind faith in materialistic science, for example. Prabhupada wanted us to speak strongly when encountering atheistic science, mechanistic science, called their bluff. On the other side, Prabhupada said that that was to a certain set of people, not necessarily everybody, certain set of people, to like be firm and develop the skill. On the other side, Prabhupada said, I can speak like this because I'm an old man and you can't. And then he would give examples. I said like this. But he was coaching us. I speak like this, you can't speak like this. I'll go back to the other side. It was a major part during, especially during a period of time when he was building the Bhaktivedanta Institute, where Prabhupada wanted strong speaking on, and for a reason. He stated at different times that the greatest obstacle for advancing Krishna consciousness is the blind faith that people have in science. If scientists say, people accept. If they say, oh, this is a nice principle, mantra meditation is very good, then it makes it easier for people to accept than if the scientist says, oh, mantra meditation is bad for you because the scientist said it. Now, lots of scientists are saying it's good, but if they were saying it's not good, it's just fine following the scientist, blind faith in the scientist. So, he wanted to challenge that. He wanted to break that blind faith. That was a major thrust of his mission, and so he would, you know, be a little fiery and say, you know, challenge this. And then there's something that's more in the middle. Those that are actually doing that, it's damaging for those that are really qualified to do that. For those that are not qualified to do that, they become a laughingstock of the people who, you know, they can take that challenging, you know, unqualified devotee and, you know, make him into powder. Like that. They know how to do it. They don't mind doing it at all. They enjoy doing it. Powder. Next. Sariputta shared with me that there was a campaign during some period of time when the Christian group went to campus and was campaigning for, you know, creationism. And the scientists that came just made powder of them because it's so unscientific. And so we may not be on a campus crusade to, like, you know, be creationists, but if we're going to speak something in it before an audience of qualified people, we have to be very well prepared, or we shouldn't. So it's discretion. There's discretion that's required. That's that one. Chakri, anything? Okay. Thank you very much. Shila Prabhupada ki jai.